Episode 255 for the love of the game on the Bleed Podcast Network is brought to you by Bet Online, your number one source for the NBA Finals and Stanley Cups betting this season. Every stat, every matchup, every line, odds, spread, you name it, Bet Online has you covered. When the game's over, you can head over to the online casino, play some blackjack, play some poker, play some slot games. Bet Online's got you covered. So head to the website today, get in on the action, use promo code BLEAV. For a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit, Bet Online, where the game starts. With that said, episode 255 for the love of the game. Let's get this work. House real big, cars real big, belly real big, everything real big, rims real big, pockets real big, brains real big. Let me tell you how I live. Like that, buy that, 24s ride that. Ladies, gentlemen, gangsters, pimps, mamas, daddies, stunners, shiners. Hey, rich snitch, I'm a real big time. King of the hood. Everything wood, look like a forest in the truck and I'm a pull. Maxin' so set, big open deck, hardwood flows and that thing that connect from the front to the back. Try to top that, 6'15", beating hard in the deck. Push that button, microwave oven, I'm just getting started, pimp, you ain't seen nothing. Is that a fish tank, bro, in the middle of the dash? Yeah, pimp, but don't put your fingers on my glass. All right, we're back. Episode 255 for the love of the game on the Bleed Podcast Network with yours truly. It's ATH, we're back in the saddle, and the 1994 vibes are officially done, dead and buried. The New York Rangers lost Game 6 to the Florida Panthers, 2-1 in Florida. They were dominated most of the game. Igor Shesterkin stood on his head, just like he did all series. Rangers couldn't generate any chances up until they pulled the goalie with about a minute 40 left. Panarin scored. The better team won. The curse of the President's Trophy lives on. And Ranger fans, you know, it shouldn't be super, super doom and gloom, because it's not like this Florida team that has had a tremendous amount of success the last 3 years, including this year. They were in the Cup Finals last year. They won the President's Trophy 2 years ago. Like, this team's got a lot of success, and it's battle-tested. And the Rangers were in these games. Now, again, it's because they have Igor Shesterkin, who's the best goalie alive, and he proved that in these playoffs. But it's not like they were that far off. But what's really frustrating about this loss to the Panthers is just the big guys were quiet. Panarin, relatively quiet. He had the pulled goalie goal at the end, but quiet. Kreider, quiet. Zibanejad, not only quiet, but tons of turnovers and was absolutely brutal. I mean, Lafreniere was great. He turned into a star this postseason, especially in this series. But the big guys We're generally quiet. Adam Fox, quiet. And that's the core of this team. So now going forward, how are they going to get a lot better with those guys under contract? I mean, we have restricted free agency, Kako, Lindgren, Schneider, unrestricted free agents, Roslovic, Wenberg, Wheeler, Gustafson, Riddell. There's going to be a lot of moving parts, but besides for Schneider, and I like Gustafson, I like Lindgren, but they're probably going to keep one of the two. Everybody else, in my opinion, is very expendable. The real problem is that the core is well paid, and they're kind of locked up for at least another year, and they're going to have to make moves around the edges. Now, in an ideal world, the best thing the Rangers could do is find a taker for Jacob Trouba and his $8 million cap hit, because he really got exposed this series. He was out of position all the time. He looked incredibly slow. He took bad penalties many times. And he's just not very good. So that would be the best, if they could somehow unload him anywhere, and see what we can do in the offseason. But you have to feel confident that this collection of players with Peter Laviolette as the coach has a little bit more toughness, that these are just more battle scars that you take to hopefully get to the next step, to get to the cup final, tweak around the edges, and then see where it goes. But you have the best goalie in the world. You have a nice core that's still under contract. You have an emerging star in Alexis Lafreniere. And see what happens. But yeah, this kind of sucks. It kind of sucks right now because I wasn't ready for the ride to be over. Just like the Knicks a couple of weeks ago. I should say a week and a half ago, whatever it was. Wasn't ready for the ride to be over. As good as the New York Yankees are, and I'll admit, they are a lot of fun. They have two of the best three hitters in baseball, and Aaron Judge and Juan Soto. Juan Soto has completely transformed the team. Their starting pitching is awesome. The fact that they got Lewis Heel from the Minnesota Twins for nobody, and he's been incredible, has been great. Gerrit Cole hasn't even pitched yet. The Yankees are awesome. Best record in the major leagues. All that being said, I'm not ready emotionally or mentally to fully care about the New York Yankees right now. I wanted more Knicks basketball. I wanted more Rangers hockey because I really thought we had a chance here. And wasn't the case. Wasn't meant to be. So, bon voyage to the Rangers. It was a fun season. We'll see what they do in the offseason. They're not that far away. But they're going to have to get acting soon because the core is not super, super young. And they're also coming up on being free agents. So we're going to see what needs to be done. Find a taker for Jacob Trouba. Find a new captain. And let's move on. Bitter end. Bitter pill to swallow, but ultimately the better team won. And they proved that in this series because they really did outplay the Rangers for, I would say, 70 to 75% of that series. Okay, so we spoke about it last week. Talked with recurring guest Alex Asopoulos about the Dallas Mavericks. NBA Finals kicks off this weekend. As I said last week, I hate both teams. I really don't want to watch. I know I will. I know I'm going to torture myself, but I'm going to try and do it as much in a social setting as opposed to being ultra, ultra locked in as I normally would be. But I do believe that, and this is my official prediction, I think the Dallas Mavericks are going to win this series. I know I said it last episode, and I know the timing of the episode is a little weird with the editing and whatnot, but the more and more I've listened to and I've analyzed this series, I don't think any of the historical data when it comes to Boston losing less than 20 games so far this season collectively, I just don't think any of the data matters. First of all, when they played each other, the midseason trades hadn't occurred yet. So Dallas is a completely different team. I also just believe that Boston's offense, which is very analytics friendly because they rely a lot on the three-point shot, I just don't trust it as much down the stretch to get good shots like I do with Luka and Kyrie. I was listening to Bill Simmons this morning. He was talking about Jaylen Brown's numbers and Jason Tatum's numbers, you know, in comparison to Luka and Kyrie. And Brown's numbers are better than Kyrie's numbers. I think Jaylen Brown has improved as a player. I even think he's a more reliable offensive player than Jason Tatum. But I know what I see, and I see the ability of Kyrie Irving to create a shot for himself or somebody else and for Luka to create a shot for somebody else. And I don't think Brown and Tatum are collectively on that level. And I think for teams that play really good defense, we'll see what happens with Kristaps Porzingis. You know, he makes Boston a lot more dynamic, especially offensively. He's also a very good rim protector. I just think that's the difference. And I think Luka Doncic is the best player in this series by a significant margin. And that's the differentiator. So we are going to have a recurring guest to talk about the Boston Celtics side because I have to give him his due where he can gloat about the Celtics being back in the finals and the fact that they've been in the Eastern Conference Finals, you know, however many years in a row now, and all these accolades, yada, yada, yada. I can't wait to fight back on this. But, you know, a lot of it is true. I mean, they're back in the finals. They've been in the Eastern Conference Finals for the last 6 years or something like that. This is all true. Ultimately, I'm not sure it's going to matter in terms of them winning a title, but they're definitely in the mix. They're a heavy favorite right now. I think the betting line right now is Boston minus 230 for the series. I like Dallas. I like Dallas. We're going to get to them in just a matter of moments. But one last thing I wanted to get off my chest. And I am not plugged into the WNBA. I don't watch the WNBA. It's not for me. But this whole business with Caitlin Clark and the way she's treated by her peers is absurd. That hip check that she got and by that girl in Chicago, I forget what her name is because she's so irrelevant. Apparently, she was a fourth round pick and was playing in Turkey. No one's ever heard of her before she decided to cheap shot and call Caitlin Clark a bitch while doing it. And Angel Reese, who's the social media darling, standing up and clapping. And then today, talking about it's not just one person who's driving ratings to the WNBA, that she's also responsible. I've had enough of this shit. Get this content out of my face, okay? The bottom line is this. Caitlin Clark is the most interesting female basketball player since Cheryl Miller, okay? She's probably the best female basketball player since Cheryl Miller. Although Diana Taurasi will have something to say about that. The fact that her peers are so incredibly jealous of her and belittle the fact that she's putting them on private jets and giving them an opportunity to earn way more money because of the collective bargaining agreement is hilarious. It just goes to show you that, like, women, a tale as old as time, women hate women. And then when you add all the social aspect, the fact that Caitlin Clark is a straight white female, you know, apparently that's not allowed to be celebrated anymore, you know, by the likes of The View and other media outlets that I don't particularly care for. It's just insane. They're jealous of her because she's driving the ratings. They should be happy that she's driving the ratings because she's putting more money in their pocket. So Angel Reese, get lost. No one cares, all right? No one cares. If it wasn't for Caitlin Clark, you would be a nobody. And the woman who hip-checked her the other day on the Chicago Sky, she is a nobody. I can't even remember her name. A nobody. The WNBA is largely a bad product with one very, very interesting dynamic player. A couple of really good players. Shout out to Diana Taurasi, Breonna Stewart, Sabrina Ionescu, New York's own. She's pretty awesome. But I've had enough of this content. Get it off my timeline. Get it off my television. Honestly, if Caitlin Clark was smart, she would go to Ice Cube, take him up on the offer, get paid $5 to $10 million to play in the Big Three, and be done with it. And all these stupid-ass females who hate on her will go back to earning pennies. Because before this year, the WNBA has lost money year over year over year. It's insane. It's absolutely insane. And the dialogue around it is insane. I'm so sick and tired of it. All right. Just had to get that rant off. I can't stand this woman, Angel Reese, the social media darling. Get lost. Now with that done, we'll bring on a recurring guest to talk about the NBA Finals, a league that people actually care about and that they're best assets are celebrated as opposed to denigrated, and we'll get to him in just a matter of moments. So last week, I gave one recurring guest the opportunity to gloat about his Dallas Mavericks. This episode, I have to give another special recurring guest the opportunity to gloat about his Boston Celtics. You all know that I don't care for either of these two teams, but fair is fair. So it's his turn to shine. Avi Wexler is back. Avi, what's good, buddy? How you doing?
I'm great, man. Excited for the finals. I can't believe we basically had to treat this past week as if it's like the Super Bowl 2 week prep time. Just been watching all the different sports shows, listening to all the different takes. It's been infuriating as a fan of one of the teams in it, but it's also been kind of fun too.
I can't imagine how insufferable it is to listen to all the sports media go back and forth and try and manufacture some stuff. So let's start right here because, you know, I wanted to get your opinion on the finals matchup. A lot has been made about the series price in a sense of what the odds are for the Celtics right now. They're somewhere between -225 to -230 favorites. I personally think that's a little crazy. What say you?
Yeah, I think it's mainly because the books are all looking at historically those really dominant teams heading into finals with 20 losses or less. I was actually just looking at this stat, and I think other than no, I think every single one of these teams that had 20 losses or less heading into the finals. So that includes regular season and the postseason. I think that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 teams now, including the Celtics, have had 20 losses or less. They're basically the all-time teams that we've always talked about. A bunch of those Jordan Bulls teams, the 80s Celtics and Lakers teams, and a couple of those LeBron teams and a couple of those Warriors teams. So the Celtics are the most recent team since 2017 to do so. And I think all of those teams ended up winning the finals that year. And I think that's probably the biggest reason because of it, because the Celtics, despite what we've covered aimlessly and what other people have said about the level of competition that they've gotten, they were still so dominant in the regular season in their own conference and against the Western Conference that I think that Vegas looks at that and says they may not have the best player in the series, but they probably have five of the best seven players in the series. And I think that's kind of baked into the reasoning. Plus they get home court advantage if there was a game seven.
So what do you agree with the line or do you not agree with the line?
I don't agree with the line just because I think in a finals, it's so hard to go against the guy who's the best player in the series in Luka Doncic, which I can comfortably say, as amazing as Jason Tatum is on the two-way side, whatever Luka does on offense just takes over the game completely. And I think that they're not giving him enough credit playing through the battles that he's had in this playoffs to give him a little bit more or give it a little bit less of a cushion. But I think you're getting good value betting on the Mavericks, especially if you wanted to bet on the Mavericks in the spread in the series or just betting Mavericks in seven, which I think is probably the best move.
The Dallas Mavericks have beaten 350 win teams on their way to the finals. So that historically means something too. I just don't think you can look at the historical numbers because Dallas made an in-season trade, which completely transformed their team. So it's like, it kind of doesn't matter. Like it's not that often where teams make an in-season trade that has as much of an impact on the team going forward as this Dallas Mavericks team did. So if you want to look at the historical numbers, I get it. If you want to look at the head-to-head matchups, like I just don't think any of it is as relevant as it would be normally.
Because I know that the Celtics played against the Mavericks after they made their deadline moves where they got Gafford and PJ Washington. I think it was in March. And I think we won. Kristaps was playing. I think everybody was healthy, but I don't think the Dallas roster and their lineup was kind of set with how it has been in the playoffs now. Like, so I think we won by like 20 plus in that game. But once again, one game regular season sample size. I don't remember what the back-to-back, who was home, who was road. But I don't understand why they're not getting as much respect given the fact that they did go through as the fifth seed. They went against three other teams in a stacked Western Conference. And look, at the end of the day, we've been saying this for basically decades. The East has always been weak. Even if it has had the best player or two of the best players in the league, it's pretty top heavy. And the Western Conference has always been a lot more challenging. We've always said that. I think there were like seven teams that won 50 or 49 plus games in the West this year. Not even close to that in the East.
The Golden State Warriors were the 10 seed and won 47 games or something like that, which
is
crazy.
And that was without Draymond for like 13, 15 games, right? So, I mean, it's a better conference. That doesn't necessarily mean to me, though, that Dallas necessarily hasn't had the toughest of matchups. I know they played the one seed in the OKC, and Shai Gilgeous is amazing. And I know that they just played a really awesome up-and-coming Minnesota team. I just think that the way that they play defense, to their credit, they've played really good defense, and guys like Luka and Kyrie are never going to get all defensive votes, but they've made big defensive plays in key moments. I think the thing with them is that they've gotten not lucked out, but they've gotten a lot of help from the fact that the teams that they've played so far have only really relied on one, maybe two guys who can actually go to the rack and score or just shoot right off the dribble. And I don't think the Celtics are the same matchup for them, which is going to be an interesting piece to see how they match up defensively. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, of course. And the East, just getting back to the East, like the East this year was a mash unit, just an absolute mash unit, in a sense where, let's face it, like the Knicks were tremendously compromised. Philly was just getting back, and they were a seven seed, which they wouldn't have played the Knicks in the first round had they been healthy. Like, it was just crazy. I mean, Mitchell, Halliburton, all this kind of stuff. The East was a mash unit. Giannis, and you are right about this. The Celtics do pose problems for Dallas, considering the Celtics have more guys who can put it on the deck and create their own shot. So let me ask you this, actually, because a lot's been making about Kristaps's injury and, you know, when is he going to be available? I anticipate he's going to play in the finals. To you, who is the X factor for the Celtics if they're going to take care of business and win the finals?
So I actually got like the update on my phone, I think within the last like 30 minutes, that Kristaps is set, barring any setbacks, to play game one. The question is, and I think it actually, I still think it is going to be Kristaps as the X factor for the whole series, is what his health is and like how good he can be. Because I think he averaged like 22, 23 a game this year. He is such an interesting piece. As you know, you've been watching him when he was on the Knicks, and you know, we saw him on the Mavericks with Luka. I know it didn't work out, and that'll be an interesting factor too, because there is real bad blood there, I think, between Dallas and Kristaps, because there was definitely expectations of what he was supposed to be there, just like how there were with Kyrie on the Celtics, and it ended even more messy with the Celtics, arguably. But I think depending on how much he can play, whether he's either going to be coming off the bench playing 20 to 30 minutes, or if he's starting and you're going to be putting him at like 35 minutes plus, I think that's the key, because what he can do for you offensively just does so much, where he can unlock a lot of lanes in the passing and the scoring, whether he's sitting at the top of the key or he's outside and bringing some of those larger defenders like Lively, Gafford, kind of outside and allowing other guys to cut and slash to the rim. I think that's the key. So yeah, I think it depends on his health and his ability to like either to effectively play on the court. The problem is he hasn't played, I think, since April 29th. So, you know, there's going to be some rust.
Conditioning's going to be a little bit of an issue.
Exactly. Now, luckily, look, they've had a week plus for him to ramp up. He probably was ramping up even before then, because they were up 3-0, 2-0 in the series against the Pacers. So they actually didn't need him to come back as much. So maybe he got some of that in. But, you know, you and I both play even rec leagues. There's a difference between playing pickup, and then there's a difference between playing in like a rec league game, even just when it comes to conditioning. And, you know, we're not NBA players. So,
I've had major issues with the pickup game I played in last night. There was a rant that needs to be policed. But other than that, I mean, CJ McCollum said it on Part of My Take, that there's a complete difference even, you know, practicing against the coaches than having to actually implement it and, you know, guard Luka Doncic in a switch in a pick and roll situation. I'm curious to see what the Mavericks do in terms of guarding him. Like I wouldn't waste Gafford or Lively guarding
on Kristaps.
Like, yeah, I would put PJ Washington there and then have the other guys room to protect the rim. But yeah, but that's just me. To me, the X factor is Jrue Holiday. Because, you know, not a lot of guys have given Luka a lot of problems. And the Celtics, you would think, have the most guys to throw at him and switch it, whether it's Jaylen Brown. I'm sure Jason Tatum will get a little bit of a taste. I'm sure Derek White will get a little bit of a taste. But to me, like, if Drew Holiday can effectively, you know, mimic what Lou Dort was able to do in the second round, because I'm not sure he's stout enough, because he's not as much of a brick shithouse as Lou Dort.
Yeah,
he does play physical and bigger than his size well.
Right.
If he's able to do that and it allows the wing defenders to use a little bit more length on Kyrie, and I think actually for you guys, shutting off Kyrie's water is almost more important than shutting off Luka's water.
Fully agree.
Drew, to me, is like the real, you know, guy who can unlock that. And let's face it, like, he's been in the NBA Finals and has won an NBA Finals. And he's just the guy, like, it's so funny the way the Celtics team is built. And I know, like, I've been a little bit of a skeptic over the metrics, and I think there's a lot of maddening stuff to them. But, like, he's won, right? And he doesn't have to do so much offensive heavy lifting. And there will be a time where he's going to have a 25-point game, and it's going to be a luxury, and that can easily swing a game, which can easily swing a series.
Yeah, I think with Drew, especially in the Eastern Conference Finals, and I think there have been moments in the regular season and other parts of the playoffs, but specifically in the Eastern Conference Finals, I think on the national stage, people really forgot that what Drew Holiday did on the Bucks when they were in their championship window with him was so important, and how it's come here, because he's being asked to basically be the primary defender on the smaller ball handler and can bully them, as you've alluded to, but can also stay with the quicker guys. And I think that was key in that either it was game two or game three where he had the massive steal, and he was kind of the touching point for a large point of that 18-point comeback, where he was the one who's like, okay, offense is getting a little stagnant. Let me get the ball. I'm just going to get to my spot, which is funny for him because his spot, I guess, is the lefty layup on a post-up move against some of these bigger guys.
Yeah.
And he gets and one here or there. He's hitting it. And then, you know, the shooting over the regular season, especially in the corner, I think he was one or two from defense as being a corner three specialist, which is so funny to think of him as a player, but that's just kind of what he was like for the Celtics when we were clicking on all cylinders.
I think he shot close to like 50% from corner
three. I think it might have even been like 60. Like he was something crazy like that. So I think the key for him in the series with the Celtics is going to be, like, sometimes there are going to be moments when Luka is just going absolutely nuts. Kyrie's going to hit her a big shot or two, and then we're going to try to be matching some of these big hero ball moves. And I think Drew's going to have to be the guy, which is what he was brought here to do, to say, hey, let's just get a good shot here, and then let's just get a good play here on defense. We're going to take it one possession at a time. We're going to reset ourselves mentally, and then we're going to get back into this game. I think he did that throughout the Pacers series, and he's done throughout other parts of the season, but I think that's going to be the key for him. Maybe not in the playmaker creativity role, but just kind of as the leadership role, which is what he's supposed to be doing. I think that's why they brought him in. I think that's something that other teams were afraid of the Celtics having when they got him, because he's had those amazing championship level plays in key moments. He had that amazing steal that led to the alley-oop to Giannis for the that finals championship run that they had. He's had a couple amazing plays for us in the Pacers series and other plays throughout the regular season too. So, I mean, you get winning players, they make big time plays in big time moments. And I think that's what you need when you're going against like whales like Luka, you know?
Do you think home court matters?
No, I don't. Especially against Luka Doncic. Because Luka, I think since the age of 13, has been playing professional basketball. And I think you and I have seen like the clips from like European leagues, and it's so much more intense than an NBA Finals arena, in my opinion. Maybe like MSGs.
Because I think we do a good job in the States not allowing for
flares.
flares to be inside. Yeah. Like, I think that's listen, the United States has its own issues with civilized society, but in this respect, sure, I think we've got it covered.
Yeah, no, I mean, you can't even throw like water bottles on the court or anything like that. And here in Europe, I just think Luka has faced so much, and I think we've seen throughout the last couple of series that Luka absolutely revels in playing on the road, because he loves being the villain and shutting up the crowd. And he's the one who has time and time again backed it up. And that's what I'm worried about. Like game seven, in general, I think is anybody's game, because it just takes one guy to get hot, whether it's a role player or a star. But you and I have seen Luka just shut everybody up and just be an absolute menace. So I don't think it matters at all. And I think also with how both these teams have played, the Celtics haven't lost on the road yet this year.
Yeah.
And I think Dallas's record's been pretty good too. So, you know.
Yeah, I mean, Dallas won, you know, a pivotal game five on the road against Oklahoma City.
Yep.
You know, we've seen it in other series, not just these two teams. Like, Minnesota went into the defending champs' house, beat them on their home court. Like, we saw the Knicks in game, you know, the first round, lose a heartbreaker, the Tyrese Maxey game, then come back in game six and take care of business against Philly. Like, home court this year has mattered less than it has in a while, and it's been trending that way for a bit now. So let me ask you this. Who are you going to hate more in this series as a fan of the opposing team? Luka and his antics with the referees, or Kyrie Irving and his just general Kyrie Irvingness and the fact that, let's just say, the Celtics' tenure did not end great?
Yeah, no, it's without a doubt Kyrie. I can't hate on Luka because I feel like he has been just he's been doing this his whole career where he's been bitching at the refs and he's been
and it
complaining about
sucks.
everything.
And it sucks always.
It sucks always, but like I'm just like so numb to it that like I'm like, all right, he's gonna complain no matter what. And like as a fan of the Celtics, and I've seen like Jason Tatum, who gets, I think, the worst whistle for like guys who are at his like status, maybe not as a top guy, but like, you know, three first team all NBAs. Definitely in the conversation for a top five, top seven player in the league.
Well, yeah, maybe if he didn't settle for so many BS pull-up jump shots with a hand in his face, he'd get a better whistle. But we can get to him in a little bit.
That's the thing. Like, it's so funny because Luka can just do that. And I'm like, all right, I just assume Luka's gonna have it go in, or he's getting fouled and he bitches about it. But with Tatum, he'll like drive the hole. And whether he gets fouled or not, he'll throw his hands up. And then we're down 5-on-4 on the other way. And it kills me more because I guess it's my team. But it's going to be Kyrie for 100% because I don't believe, like, I think after they won the Western Conference and they interviewed him on court, he was like, they asked him like any thoughts or feelings about going to Boston. He was like, he just gave like the most like cordial professional answer. And I was like, man, this guy is so full of it. Like, there's just no way. It ended so poorly. I've seen all the old videos that have resurfaced of stomping on the logo, of flipping off fans, telling them to F off, like all this stuff. It's so easy to hate him for so many reasons, especially with how it ended. So I'm like looking forward to hating him the most, but I'm actually more looking forward to hating those random role players on the Mavs that are really going to bother me. Like, I know that Maxi Kleba is going to hit like three threes in a game that's going to drive me nuts. I know that Justin Hardy is going to have like some 15 to 20 point game that's going to come out of nowhere that's going to kill me. But I think, yeah, Kyrie without a question is going to be number one.
We've gotten a lot of time off because of the way the schedule broke out. And there's been a lot of insufferability in terms of getting things to talk about, whether it's the WNBA discourse, which is all-time horrific, totally different subject, whether it's the NBA finals. But the thing about this coverage is that I've seen on Twitter that Kyrie needs an apology, that we need to apologize to this man. Like, yes, he's been a model citizen this season. He's been great for Dallas. This is arguably his best season ever in terms of playing basketball. But spare me this notion that he deserves an apology. Like, if you act like an asshole for five straight years, like, you're allowed to be called an asshole. If
100%.
You stop acting like an asshole, you won't be called an asshole, but it doesn't mean what we need to apologize for calling you out for acting like an asshole just because you've had model behavior, or I should say professional behavior, for the first time in 6 years.
Not only that, but also just like, I also hate the discourse that's been coming around. It's like, oh, are Luka and Kyrie the greatest backcourt ever? And it's like, they haven't even won yet. Like, can we give like some credit to Klay and Steph, who just won four titles together? Can we give some credit to some other great guard comp? Like, it doesn't make any sense to me. Like, hey, I know we do this all the time. And by we, I mean society and the media, who I'm obviously not a part of, but where it's like, we got to be the first to have the hot take. We got to be the first to be right to something. But like, hey, can we just like step
let
back
it
a
simmer.
Little bit? Let's just let it simmer a little bit. Like, oh, hey, Kyrie and Luka just averaged 30 in the playoffs, not in the playoffs, in the Western Conference Finals together. So did Jaylen and Jason Tatum. And the series before that, I think Kyrie had a couple games where he only scored like not even 15 points. So like before we like say that Kyrie and Luka, all-time greats. So why don't we just say, hey, Kyrie is an amazing, when he's locked in, an amazing number two. Probably the best number two offensively that we've ever had in the league. I'm willing to say that offensively, because defensively, it's not even a question that Scottie Pippen's better. You can argue other guys are also ahead of him defensively too. You could say Klay Thompson's better because he was 3 and D.
It's a long list. You don't even have to justify it.
But yes, exactly. So Kyrie has been awesome for this year for the Mavs. As you said, we don't need to litigate it anymore. Just everybody needs to pump the brakes. Let's see how he does when the shots aren't falling and they actually have to play some defense, because I think that's the key for Dallas. They haven't really had to rely on Luka and Kyrie to play real defense over the course of 48 minutes because, as I alluded to earlier, OKC really only had Shai Gilgeous, who was able to like create off the dribble. Anthony Edwards was really the only guy who created off the dribble. And all those games with Minnesota, except for the last game, were close, despite the fact that Ant struggled and Karl Anthony Towns was basically nowhere to be found. And those games were all 1 to 2 to 3 point games. So, you know, if you're going to rely on the best or second best player from the other team to have an off night to just barely win, I think you have to be a lot better prepared when you're going to play against the 64-win Celtics. You know what I mean? Where they're just going to be guys who can all create, all score, and all play defense.
Joe Mazz, let's just say he took a little bit of a whipping in the 2022 finals and then last year, where I think a lot of the Celtics skepticism comes from is the fact that they lost the 8th seed Miami Heat in that series. Where are you at with Joe Mazz right now? What's your confidence level in him to put guys in the right spots, to call timeouts when he's supposed to call timeouts, to make substitutions, you know, properly? Where are you at with him right now on a scale of 1?
I think he's definitely improved. I think the key with last year was that he was handed the keys to the kingdom 3 days before the season starts. He had no staff. A bunch of crazy stuff with Ime Udoka and everything happens. And it's hard to be a first-time head coach.
Excuse me. I have to correct myself. He did not coach in the 2022 finals. I mean, he was on the staff, but that was Ime Udoka.
Right. Yeah.
I apologize.
No. All good. I think he's shown a lot of improvement. And I think he's not going to be the greatest X's and O's guy. I think he really is. If I had to equate him to one coach in the NFL, I feel like he's kind of like Mike Tomlin, where he's a really elite motivator and he gets the guys all bought in. Is he going to be the biggest X's and O's guy? Probably not. He's kind of more dependent on overall general scheme. And with Missoula, the whole scheme with him has been shoot the three, tighten up on defense in certain spots. And that's how we're going to win these games. He's not necessarily a Brad Stevens type X's and O's guy who's going to be like, okay, here's the timeout. Let's run this out of timeout play. Right. But I think what he does do is motivate a lot of guys. And they've all spoken in interviews, like Derek White, who's had an amazing season, has credited Missoula as being the biggest reason that he's gotten the confidence to become the player he has this year because of the trust and tutoring that he's gotten from Joe, not on X's and O's side, but just being like a mentor, giving him confidence. So I think when you have a guy like that, who they all rally behind, maybe not as an X's and O's guy, but just as a motivator and as a coach that they want to play for, I think that's the key. The problem is, sometimes you kind of just need to lay into these guys and tell them when they're playing like assholes, which is something that Ime Udoka was really good at. So it's hard to find that balance. I think, though, on the other side of it, the fact that they're playing against Jason Kidd and not Eric Spoelstra or a Steve Kerr type or Popovich, you know, Phil Jackson, I think that's kind of a little bit, it kind of balances out a little bit more, because as amazing as Jason Kidd was as a player, he struggled as a coach. People were saying that he was going to be on the hot seat after last year where they missed out of the playoffs. I know they were tanking intentionally, but still, I think the key with the Mavericks is also seeing, hey, in this battle of, let's just say, checkers between Joe Mazzulla and Jason Kidd, it's definitely not a chess match. It's going to be a checkers match. Who's going to like fuck up the least, you know?
Celtics offense relies a lot on threes. I know that's what the analytics love, but let's just say they're not the Splash Brothers Warriors in terms of shooters.
Yep.
Whether it is in actual makes or the respect that other teams have for them as shooters, because that matters a lot, right? Is that the one thing that gives you pause, besides that their offense is so heavily reliant on the three, and that when it gets into a tight situation, it really bogs down. The ball sticks way too much. And let's just say the reason for the Jason Tatum skepticism is he hasn't done great, you know, in fourth quarters and tight games in terms of just getting a shot for himself or for others. So is that your biggest concern going into this series?
I'd push back on the Tatum mark there, because he has, and I know that in this playoff run, they haven't really had to be relying on big fourth quarter plays, especially in the first two series. But there were a lot of moments, I think, in the Indiana series where he did show up, especially late. Like, I think he dominated the overtime possession, I think he had like 10 points or something in overtime. And that was before having like 28 in the first three quarters. I know he had a bad fourth. I think there are other moments where what Tatum does for them doesn't have to be the guy who is scoring at will, because they have other great options. For them, it's more like, hey, can you be the gravitational force on offense that takes a little bit more eyeballs away from the defense, so that guys like Jalen and Drew and Derek can all actually get their own shot and get going? I think that's the key. I don't think it necessarily has to be Tatum being the guy who scores 10 points in the fourth. I think it needs to be, hey, can we make sure that Tatum gets like a couple nice plays here and plays some really clutch defense?
But then why do they go to it? Why have they routinely gone to it where it's basically just clear out for him at the elbow, for him at the nail? And it's just like, you know, the results haven't been there. Why don't they just run their same stuff?
I don't know. And I think that comes down to more Mazzulla than it comes down to Tatum. And maybe it's Mazzulla saying, hey, we just need to get the ball in Tatum's hands or Brown's hands, and then they have to go make a play. And at the end of the day, if that's the case, then Tatum or Brown have to make a play. And that can't be the dreaded step back three that we all know is coming. It has to be get your butt into the guy, go to the hole, attack, or put up a good jumper. But I think back to your original question about the threes with the Celtics, for me, as long as they're making good passes and they're taking open shots, if they don't fall, they don't fall. You can't be upset if they're missing wide open threes, and that happens sometimes. And in our two playoff losses this year, which is funny to say that we only had two playoff losses, but in our two playoff losses this year, it came down to the other team hitting a historic amount of threes and shooting more threes than us, and then us just not playing good defense and or rebounding. So I think for me, threes will come and go. They'll get shots otherwise. And yes, Dallas is a really good paint defense, but if we're stretching them five out, then we should have some room to operate in the paint. The question is for me, in transition and in the half court defense, are we going to be able to get rebounds, which I think we struggle with personally, because I don't think Kristaps is an amazing rebounder, and we're not as physical. And they're not as physical as guys like Lively and Gafford. So we have to make sure that we're protecting the baseline from those lob plays that they've been done. I think Mavericks have like 60 lobs that they've like just.
Yeah. They have over half the total number of alley-oops in the playoffs. They have over half of them.
So I think that's the key for us. Can we stop the lob and get defensive stops and then also just get rebounds? Because I think that's going to be the key for us more than the shots. The shots will fall or the shots won't fall. I'm not too worried about that.
So your biggest concern going into this series, besides for Kyrie Irving's offense, as you said, it limit his water as opposed to Luka, because Luka's almost just like, it's going to happen whether you like it or not. Yeah. To you, it's the rebounding battle?
No, it's everything that's happening in the paint on defense, right? So it's the defensive rebounding, but also protecting from the lob, because I think that's where once Luka gets you on your hip as a defender, which he usually gets people on their hip, he just dominates that possession no matter what. And he's either going to get the foul, hit the lob. So it's, I think that's the key. Just making sure anything that's inside the key is not going to kill us, which is really hard to do against that team. But I don't know. I think offensively, I'm not worried about the overall strategy. But yeah, late in game, I mean, who isn't worried about the late in game strategy of their offense? Like at the end of the day,
I'll tell you who's not.
Well,
the
okay.
Dallas Mavericks aren't. Yeah, the team that you're playing.
Of course.
You're not worried about it.
No, I know. But like that's when you have two generational like ISO scores. So, but like we don't have that offensive firepower. We just don't. But where we rely on with our offensive strength, I think, is just ball movement and just finding the open shot. So at the end of the day,
if they move the ball and don't just give it to Tatum and Brown and say, go take us home, like, just run your stuff.
I'm with you. So I, look, that's what it's always going to be. The last 2 minutes we need the ball in our best player's hands, go make a play. But I think there has been some moments where I think in that game three comeback for the Celtics, Tatum had that amazing play where they were down, I think five or something, and he drives and then had that unbelievable behind the back pass to Al Horford when there were two guys on him. I think most years, Tatum is the one who's actually just kind of putting up that layup, probably looking for a foul that isn't going to be there. And then we lose that game or we lose that possession, whatever. I think he's shown that he's more willing this year, especially with how the team is constructed. So credit to Brad Stevens also and Joe Mazzulla for emphasizing you have other guys that can score here. So if you have two guys on you, there's going to be an open guy. Find that open guy, whether it's a skip pass, whether it's passing it to the next guy to pass over to the open guy and make them recover, go ahead. But when it's 5 seconds left, you're right. I need Jason Tatum to hit a goddamn shot and not do this dreaded step back thing that everybody and their mother knows is coming. So hopefully they drive and they kick, but that's my biggest worry, I guess, otherwise.
Your confidence meter going into the finals, in terms of them winning it, scale of 1 to 10, what's your number?
I mean, last time we talked about this when the Celtics were in the finals and the Warriors, I think I even said Celtics in six, and I was pretty confident then, and that was because of how great the Celtics were playing. And then the Warriors put them in a mental pretzel, Jedi mind trick them, win the series in six after being up 2-1. I would say Celtics in six again, just because I've had a full week to toss and turn on it. I think as amazing as Luka and Kyrie are, I think the fact that we have four guys at least who can play two ways, I think is going to be the key. And I'm trusting the better team over the course of the regular season in the playoffs. Not necessarily the team that has had the tougher road to get it done. So I'm going to say Celtics in six, and my confidence level is at a 7.
Okay. All right. I'm going to go the other way, and it's not because I hate the Celtics, because I don't particularly like the Mavericks either. Right. I picked Dallas in six. Mm-hmm. And my rationale is both teams play pretty solid defense. It's just, I trust Luke and Kyrie to get good looks at the end of games in close games, whether it's for them or for anybody else. And that's honestly the only differentiator. And I think the gap between their ability to do so and Tatum and Brown's ability to do so, when the game, as you mentioned just a moment ago, dissolves into your best player, go make a play for yourself or somebody else. I think that's it. And to get back to the first question is, I think the series price is a little inflated. Now, I'm not saying the Celtics shouldn't be favored because they were better in the regular season. They have home court, even though we established that home court really doesn't mean as much anymore. But I think the price is a little off, and I just trust those guys down the stretch more.
Which is crazy to say, considering it's Kyrie Irving, but I guess.
I'm one of his biggest haters.
No, I'm with you. I think for me, the only pause I have on Kyrie is that in the previous two series, he was not as dominant. And I think that might've just had to do with defensive matchups and how he ended up playing, and people kind of flipped it as like, oh, Kyrie's just kind of figuring it out. He's going to play a little more energy spark, but like you actually need more from Kyrie than that. And I think if the matchups end up working out the way I think it should be, where you have Tatum on the big and you kind of have Jaylen on Luka, who actually I think has played him up pretty well historically because he has the size and he has the speed and strength to kind of deal with Luka. I think that's going to be the key for the Celtics. Luka's going to score 30, 10, and 10. Let's just say he's going to have a 30, 10, and 10 probably the whole series. The key is, as you said before, and as I agree with, turn off the faucet for Kyrie and make it so that Derek Jones Jr. and PJ Washington beat us in the series, because that's going to be the key. And I think that's where the Celtics advantage is. But I agree with you from the jump. I think giving that much value to Luka is not respecting him enough. But then again, it was like, what, minus 200 to minus 185. So it's not, we're almost splitting hairs here. That's like, what, a 50-47 difference. Like, it's not a huge difference.
Yeah. I mean, Derek White, Drew Holiday, Jaylen Brown, I'm sure, are all going to take turns guarding Kyrie. I'm sure they're all going to take turns guarding Luka. It's going to be a fascinating series. I am not looking forward to watching it. It's going to be torture, But I, Avi, I appreciate you coming on. It's always a pleasure. And I'm sure you'll probably give me a whole lot of crap this entire week. So I look forward to that. And yeah, I'd wish you luck, but I'm not going to do that. So
thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it. And please, whatever I give you, you have to return back. So when the Celtics are down 20, you can just start sending the memes all my way. I deserve all of it. So
I can't wait for the Jason Tatum 7 for 25 brick muse memes. It'll be fantastic. All right, bud. Thanks so much for doing it. Have a good one. And whatever.
Thank you. Go Celtics. You can say it.
Later. Bye. Thanks again to recurring guest Avi Wexler for coming on to talk about the Celtics, talk about his fears, his thoughts on the matchup in the finals against the Dallas Mavericks. Always good to talk to him. Not going to really enjoy watching these finals, but it is what it is. That's episode 255 for the love of the game. One last thing before I go, because I forgot to mention in the monologue at the end with the WNBA rant. The WNBA has to love this because right now they are in the spotlight like they've never been before in terms of just talking points in the media, the daily debate shows, which I personally find insufferable. Whether you like the content or not, that's up to you, but there's no doubt that the WNBA is benefiting from all this. I just think it all stinks, and I've had it. But anyway, that's episode 255 for the love of the game. Take us out, mini prep.
This the part where I give my phone number to all the girls that's hot. Dime 976, that outside thing. 874, y'all to show me how it goes. Have you ever seen a big stretch truck like that? Now have you ever seen a big broad butt like that? But don't call out of a pants. What a bow legged cowboy thing. House real big, cars real big, belly real big, everything real big. Rims real big, pockets real big, rings real big. Let me tell you how I live. Like that, buy that, 24s ride that. Ladies, gentlemen, gangsters, pimps, mamas, daddies, stunners, shiners. Oh! Rich snitch, I'm a real big timer.